Advisement, the court will proceed to the sixth case, the United States versus McCray. Mr. Alvarado.
May it please the court, Mr. Bass. Your Honors, this court has said in many different ways that it's hard to glean from a cold record what effect a judge's questioning would have on a witness and how that would impact a jury. But I don't think the court set up an impossible standard to meet. But I think the way to start is to consider the objective circumstances that I think everybody can agree on. One, this was a very short trial. I think the testimony lasted a little over a day. It wasn't like there was a very complicated set of facts or issues for the jury to decide. It was a very basic case. A confidential informant who testified and several police officers. The issues themselves were not complicated. The cross-examination of the witnesses was very straightforward. The government's presentation of the evidence was very clear. There was no real reason for the court to get into any extended questioning of any of the witnesses. Mr. Bass is a very able prosecutor. He's quite capable of examining his witnesses and cross-examining any defense witnesses, and I believe I'm just as capable of doing the same. It simply wasn't necessary for what happened in this case. What this court has done in other cases where this issue has been raised is to look at the judge's comments and try to determine whether there were some innocuous reasons why the court did what it did. In this case, we set out three specific examples where the judge interrupted the cross-examination of the government's informant. Where the court had interrupted and said basically
this plain error, no objection was made. If you didn't want the judge to ask the questions, you object. So why is this plain error?
Okay. Well, first of all, I would respectfully point out that Judge McCuskey himself pointed out, when I finally did object, that the court doesn't allow sidebars. In fact, I tried to approach the bench.
I don't care about sidebars. I care about objections.
Well, but as a defense attorney, I care about the effect that I'm creating on a jury. And what worried me and what concerned me was trying to tell a federal judge that he's raining on my parade.
Yeah, we hear this often, and we say as often, that does not excuse the need to make objections. If you don't want the court to do something, you have to tell him so.
I understand.
Was there no
that.
Break, Mr. Alvarado, in this case?
I'm sorry?
Was there no break point? I know you said it was a short trial, but was there an opportunity at a lunch break to, out of the presence of the jury, speak to this point?
Well, and that's exactly how I did finally raise the issue with the police officer. When the direct examination of the officer ended and I asked to approach the bench, the judge reminded me that he doesn't allow sidebars, but then he took a break. And then we were able to address the issue of the court's questioning of that police officer. I made a motion for a mistrial at that time, which was denied. But you understand, Your Honors, this was a very quick, fluid trial where the witnesses were presented one after the other very quickly. And
well, could you have asked, I don't know Judge McCuskey's practices, obviously, but could you have asked to be heard outside the presence of the jury? I mean, could you have just interrupted the proceedings appropriately, perhaps, and just asked to be heard outside the presence?
I could have, and I did. But at that point, that's when the judge said that he wouldn't allow that. What I was concerned with was the specter of arguing with a federal judge in front of the jury.
I appreciate that. I'm very sensitive to what you're saying. And but I just, I guess he doesn't have sidebars because he just doesn't have them, although they could be recorded. I mean, you know, all right, that's, go ahead.
But getting to your original point, Your Honor, that why is this plain error? Well, that is a that is a very difficult concept to try to prove for a defense attorney, because we're trying to divine what was the effect on a jury. In this case, they acquitted the defendant of one count of distribution, convicted him of two others. Now, the government will say, well, that means the jury thoroughly considered the strength of the government's case. Well, by this, I would say just the opposite, that the jury was conflicted about the evidence, and perhaps the judge's questioning, which conveyed this reassuring, benevolent attitude, that tipped the balance in favor of conviction on those other two counts. Now, the courts, when you've examined this issue in the past with other cases, and you've looked at the comments, you've always looked to see if there were innocuous reasons for them. What innocuous reason could there be for the judge to say, well, I haven't heard any evidence that you've ever beaten up anybody and taken their money so you could buy drugs, in spite of the fact that that witness admitted a prior conviction for armed robbery? And then to say to the witness, well, now, if somebody didn't give you the money voluntarily, you wouldn't beat them up, throw them on the ground, and take their money, would you? Or words to that effect. Clearly, that conveyed a bias in favor of the witness. It suggested to the witness what his answer should be, and it gave this impression to them that the court was doing the prosecutor's job and believed in the prosecutor's case.
Sounds like a very odd argument. I've just heard you argue that all leading questions suggest a bias in favor of the witness. That's not ordinarily what we understand by leading questions.
Well, I don't believe I even used the word leading in this argument to you. I did
That's
refer to it.
That's what the judge did. He asked a leading question.
Right. And he suggested an answer.
Right.
And he got the answer. And it conveyed an impression to the jury. Now, defense attorneys do it. Prosecutors do it all the time. But that's what
right.
their job...
And it's always objectionable, so you could have objected. Your Honor, could you please phrase that in a non-leading way?
Or refrain from doing it altogether. I could have done that. But if the judge had insisted that he wanted to do it, I would have been in front of a jury and having the jury hear that and perhaps inflict even more damage on my case.
I must say, I just don't understand it at all. And it's like saying that if you object on a particular ground and the judge overrules the objection, you feel no need to object ever again, because that would be like arguing with the judge. That's not the law either. You've got to object every time. Even if the judge has ruled against you five times, you've got to object number six.
You're right, Your Honor. That is true. But in that case, I'm objecting.
Here, you didn't even let the judge rule against you once. For all you know, if you'd done that, the judge would have said, I'm terribly sorry. It is a leading question. Let me rephrase it. Why should you assume that the judge will make an error in response to your objection rather than doing it the right way?
Well, because I think because you have to make those split-second decisions in trials all the time, and you're trying to gauge the effect on the jury, not necessarily what is the proper thing to do to preserve a point for purposes of appeal. But finally, Your Honors, I just want to say one final thing. When I was driving up yesterday from Peoria, I was listening to the confirmation hearings of Judge Alito, and there was an extended questioning about the meaning of stare decisis.
I wouldn't describe it as questioning.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I would describe it as pontification.
Well, and my point is this. The senator tried to make the point that stare decisis means a lot of things to a lot of different judges. When this court is determining whether there was substantial prejudice in this case to Clemeth McRae, I think it could vary depending on how you look at the actual record itself. All we ask is that you look at the totality of the comments of the judge in the course of this very small trial and find that there was substantial prejudice.
Thank you, Mr. Alvaro. Mr. Bass.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Timothy Bass on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, the issue before the Court is not whether Judge McCuskey's questions were necessary. And Rule 614 does provide a mechanism, unlike other rules governing the raising of objections, for a defendant to raise the objection later outside the presence of the jury. So the rule itself does recognize the circumstance where there may be concern about raising such an objection to a judge's conduct in the presence of the jury. And that was not done. The only issue that was raised here was the law enforcement officer, Lieutenant Swenson's non-responsive answer to Judge McCuskey's question, not an objection to the question in the first instance. So the issue before the court is not whether the questions were unnecessary, but whether those questions conveyed a bias in favor of the prosecution witness, and if so, whether the defendant suffered serious prejudice, and more so in this case, whether a plain error occurred. Now, there were three instances of the judge's questioning that are challenged on appeal. The first dealt with questions that Judge McCuskey asked in response to Mr. Alvarado's question about would he lie to obtain drugs? And Judge McCuskey interjected and asked him if he would fraudulently panhandle to obtain money for drugs. That kind of question hardly conveyed a bias in favor of Mr. Wright, the witness. And the second area was after Mr. Alvarado asks Mr. Wright, the witness, whether
advancing the inquiry? If we're going to just examine it for bias for a second, Mr. Bass. When the district court says, when you say lie, do you mean if I was walking by you and you'd ask, would you give me money for food? How would that advance the inquiry? I want to weigh this prejudice potential that obviously Mr. Alvarado advances.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not going to stand here and suggest to you that Judge McCuskey's questions were essential, but I think you can say, I think it's a fair characterization of his questions, that they tended to clarify the degree to which the witness would lie to obtain money for drugs, which was the question that Mr. Alvarado asked in the first instance. And that is an appropriate inquiry for the judge to make, particularly given the subject matter of the questioning. And likewise, with respect to Mr. Alvarado's question about how the witness was searched, again, I'm not suggesting to you that Judge McCuskey's question of whether the witness was searched in his underwear and whether the officers would have found the drugs was essential or even necessary.
Well, how did panhandling come into the case? Was there any predicate for that inquiry, the panhandling?
No, it came up, Your Honor. I believe Mr. Alvarado asked the question, would you lie to obtain money for drugs?
Right.
And Judge McCuskey followed up on that to inquire to what extent Mr. Wright would lie to obtain money for drugs. And I believe the witness responded that he would make believe that he was panhandling to obtain money for food. Now, that kind of question, and especially the answer to the judge's question, again, hardly conveyed the witness in a favorable light, that he would deceive people into thinking that they were giving him money for food when what he was really doing was getting the money for drugs. And again, with respect to the question about how the manner in which the witness was searched, I don't believe that the judge's question was necessary. And if that were the inquiry, then we may have an issue. But the question is whether the judge's question, were you searched in your underwear and would the officers have found it, conveyed a bias. And I don't believe on this record that conclusion can be reached. With respect to the final area of questioning of Lieutenant Swenson, that was in response to questions that I was asking on direct examination. And the judge asked the witness a perfectly appropriate question, had you ever met the witness personally? Now, there was nothing improper about that question. In fact, that was clearly within the realm of the judge's prerogative to clarify the evidence before the jury. Lieutenant Swenson's answer to that question was clearly non-responsive. Rather than saying, no, I had not met him personally, he went on to raise what could have been an improper inference before the jury that his acquaintanceship with the witness was from looking at booking photos. But Mr. Alvarado objected, and the judge quickly instructed the jury to disregard the response. And this court's case law, clearly in other courts, precedents clearly say that we presume that the jury followed that instruction. So when you look at the circumstances of these questions and the judge's conduct, you can't say that he conveyed a bias in favor of the witness or that the defendant suffered serious prejudice. Or again, in this case, whether the questioning in these three isolated instances resulted in a miscarriage of justice. And finally, at the end of the trial, the judge did instruct the jury that nothing he did or said was meant to convey.
What is the time frame again? I want to know when the instruction was given vis-a-vis the beginning of the trial.
The instruction was given, Your Honor, at the end of the trial.
No, I understand that. But, I mean, when did the trial start? Just give me a time frame. Mr. Alvarado says a pretty short trial, so.
It was. I believe, Your Honor, that we picked a jury on the first day of trial. We picked a jury in the morning. We began the trial in the afternoon, and it concluded the following day. So in the course of 2 days, and I believe the judge's instruction to the jury occurred on the same day as the question to the officer. So that is an additional reason to find that the
verdict came in on the second day.
It did, Your Honor. And that instruction, again, is another reason to find that no miscarriage of justice occurred. Your Honors, if there are no other questions, the government would ask that the conviction be affirmed. No. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bass. Mr. Alvarado. How about that instruction, Mr. Alvarado, coming at the end of a short trial? Wouldn't that cure it?
Well, that is what the courts say. Now, I don't know. I don't know whether the jury would still consider the effect of the questioning, at least subliminally, in a subconscious way. But just a couple of quick points about the facts. When the district court asked the officer if he personally knew the witness, I note that Mr. Bass had prefaced his question right before that with the point, now without getting into the details of how you knew Mr. The witness, I knew exactly what he was doing. He was walking a fine line. He was trying to avoid prejudicing the defendant by pointing out that the identification came from booking photos. But that's precisely what happened when the district court then said, "How did you personally meet him?" And then the witness started launching into his answer that was clearly going to be prejudicial, and I had no choice but to object.
And the judge then directed his response.
Yes, he struck it, asked the jury to disregard. One other quick point about the facts. When the judge, when I was cross-examining the informant and I said, is there anything that you wouldn't do to get money for drugs? The witness's only response was, well, there are certain things I wouldn't do to my mother. And at that point, the judge interrupted and softened the blow of that by asking him, well, now, I haven't heard anything about you beating up people for money. You wouldn't throw somebody down on the ground and take their money if they wouldn't give it to you voluntarily, would you? Completely undercut the effect of the cross-examination. And I just don't think it was appropriate in such a short case involving very simple facts. That's all, Your Honors.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Alvarado. Thank you, Mr. Bass. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.
I'm sitting there like this. That's what I want to end and totally every time I'm going to be a savage for our industry.